Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Bars and restaurants have become another point of conflict in the COVID-19 pandemic. On the one side are government officials who say a business in which people have to take their masks off is a risky business. On the other side are the restaurant owners who, in many cases, say the latest round of state restrictions barring indoor dining in most places in Illinois, that those are an existential threat. Later, we'll talk to two business owners and a public health expert about dining out in COVID-19. But first, we are one day away from the election. As of yesterday, state officials say nearly 3.5 million people have already voted in Illinois. That's about 62% of the total number of people who cast ballots in the last presidential election 4 years ago. Meanwhile, an increasing number of congressional campaigns in the state are getting national attention. In fact, both the Trump and Biden campaigns have waded into at least two of these House races with messages of support for their respective candidates, aiming to give them a final push as election season draws to a close. Joining us now to get us up to speed and give a final preview on these races are Ryan Denham, who's a reporter and content director at public radio stations WGLT in Bloomington and WCBU in Peoria. Hello, Ryan. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be here, Brian.
And we also have with us Rachel Hinton, who is chief political reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times. Hello, Rachel. Glad to have you back on as well.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And listeners, our lines are open if you'd like to join our conversation. The number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Wondering if you've already voted, what are you seeing out there? Maybe you have some questions on any of the competitive House races around the state. Give us a call. The number again, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. 9455, or you can always tweet us at 21st Show. Rachel, I want to begin with you. Last week, President Donald Trump took time out of his packed campaign schedule to host a tele-town hall, stumping for Republican Jim Oberweis, who is challenging, Republican State Senator Jim Oberweis, who's challenging freshman Democratic Congresswoman Lauren Underwood for the 14th District seat. It's one of only two seats Democrats hold in Illinois that Trump won in 2016. Organizers say it attracted 7,000 listeners. Rachel, what does the president jumping into this race tell us? What is the lay of the land there?
I think the president jumping into this race shows that Republicans think that this race, this district, is winnable. Current Representative Lauren Underwood won in 2018 in the blue wave that we saw. And I think Republicans still see this as a chance to get the seat back. Underwood, when she won in 2018, she ousted former Representative Randy Holtgren, who'd been there since 2011. And the district had been seen for a while as a pretty strong Republican, a Republican stronghold, sorry. So I think Donald Trump weighing in shows that they really think that this is competitive and they're going all out. And they think that the President Trump is perhaps the best closer to get undecided voters to side with Oberweis, to vote for him.
Of course, under Congresswoman Lauren Underwood, though, has been, you know, I think she has, fair to say, she has like looked out for the idea that she has a moderate district. I mean, she hasn't necessarily embraced some of the most liberal ideas coming out of some of the members of the Democratic caucus in Washington. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, I definitely say that that's fair. Before the pandemic, she spoke at a City Club, luncheon, and she was asked where she stands on, and this is before Biden was a presidential nominee, but she didn't want to say who she supported at the time. I don't think that she wants to be seen as being too far left or you know, too far to the right, if you can be too far to the right as a Democrat. I think she is trying to play the middle and trying to make sure that she can garner as many votes as possible. And in her district, especially one that Trump won and Pritzker lost as well, I think she understands or has a better understanding of what her constituents want to hear from her. And I don't think that's, you know, far left policies or quote unquote far left policies.
Yeah. All right, Ryan Denham, I want to ask you, I mentioned a moment ago that presidential campaigns are weighing in on some of these local races. And in Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan's race, she's challenging, she's a Democrat challenging incumbent Republican Congressman Rodney Davis for the 13th Congressional District, which goes from, that includes Bloomington, Champaign-Urbana, Springfield, and goes all the way over almost into the sort of the outskirts of the Metro East area along the Mississippi River. Senator Kamala Harris released a video. Vice presidential nominee Kamala Harris released a video in support of Londrigan. Ryan, can you tell us what did Senator Harris have to say?
Essentially that, you know, Betsy Londrigan is the type of person a President Biden would need in Congress to get his agenda passed. And it's an interesting move. Obviously, the congressional district we're talking about, the 13th, voted for President Trump last time around in 2016 by about 5 percentage points. So, you know, a big question in this particular district is how the whole Trump effect is going to play out. Is that going to help Davis? Is that going to hurt Davis? Is someone like Biden, Senator Harris, going to help Londrigan or hurt Londrigan?
And it's, and Davis is kind of trying to have it as many ways as he can, right? I mean, he has hewed pretty closely to President Trump, certainly more than when he disavowed his support for President Trump. And or I guess he would say, how did he say it? He wasn't going to say who he voted for and was could not vote for either of the candidates in 2016. He's hewed pretty closely to the president since then, though.
Exactly. Yeah. And I know you've covered that district yourself. And yeah, you're referring to 2016 after the Access Hollywood tape came out where, you know, the president was expressing some misogynist, sexist behavior. And Davis, you know, backed away from him then. But, you know, in the time since, over the last 4 years, Davis's voting record has been, according to 538, about 91% aligned with Trump's priorities. He's an honorary co-chair of Trump's reelection campaign in Illinois. And, you know, the times I've asked Congressman Davis about, you know, do you think you're aligned too closely with the president? You know, he's pushed back and said, no, I mean, I'm supportive of the president because of his policies. And he gives that kind of standard line of, you know, I don't support all the tweets, but kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And how have the candidates, I mean, and we should point out that if listeners don't remember, Davis, I mean, just barely defeated Londrigan back in 2018. So this is a rematch this year. I think it was just a couple of thousand votes, about a percentage point. Is anything different in 2020? And how are the candidates campaigning in the final stretch leading up to the election?
Well, I think the biggest difference is that, you know, this is a presidential election cycle now. You know, 2 years ago, the president was not on the ballot, literally, although I think people might have been voting, you know, with some amount of emotion behind that as if you were. But I mean, this time, the presidency literally is. So we're going to see turnout, you know, that is higher accordingly. And, you know, I'm keeping an eye on the college towns. You know, the biggest chunk of votes in this district is coming out of Champaign-Urbana, which is a college town. A top five community for the district is Bloomington-Normal, which is a college town. So if turnout is super high in those places, that could make up a 2,000 vote deficit that Londrigan had last time around.
Yeah, although there's a question with the pandemic if maybe some, you know, students maybe are not as present or politically plugged in as they might have been 2 years ago, I guess. Listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We've just been hearing from Ryan Denham, who's content director at WGLT and WCBU public radio stations in Bloomington and Peoria, respectively. We're also speaking with Rachel Hinton, chief political reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times. And we're going to add to the conversation now Tim Shelley, who's news director at WCBU Peoria Public Radio. Tim, thanks for being here. And you had a piece last week on how the race for the House seat in the 17th Congressional District. This is incumbent Democratic Congresswoman Sherry Bustos facing a Republican challenger, Esther Joy King, and that it might be closer than expected. What can you tell us about that, Tim?
Yeah, there's some signs that this race may, in fact, turn out to be a little bit closer than originally anticipated. So the Illinois 17th Congressional District was one of those pivot counties that voted for Barack Obama in 2012, but swung to vote for Donald Trump in 2016. So Some recent reporting has shown that this race has tightened up a bit, some recent polling that's come out. In fact, over the weekend, there was a report in The Hill that had indicated that the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee has put $1 million kind of last minute in some advertising for Congresswoman Bustos to bolster her message a little bit here in the 17th congressional district. So by all accounts, this is probably going to be one of the tightest races she's seen in a number of years.
And this would, of course, be, I say of course, maybe not of course, for people who are not political insiders. You mentioned the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, and she runs that, right? She is, her job in Congress among Democrats is helping Democrats stay elected. So, I mean, that would be a sort of a symbolic victory as well as a potential extra seat pickup if Republicans were able to defeat her when it's her job to make sure that Democrats get elected to Congress, right?
Absolutely. And that also was one of her selling points for winning the chairmanship of that committee a couple of years back, was that she was a Democratic congresswoman from a Trump district who pretty solidly won her reelection race back in 2016. So that showed that she had the ability to appeal to voters who might otherwise vote for the president but be willing to switch across party lines down ticket. So that was one of the arguments that was used to when she received that chairmanship.
Yeah. Rachel, I want to ask you, there's another suburban Chicago congressional seat that was expected to be contentious, and this is another one of the ones that Democrats flipped in 2018, that a freshman Democrat, Sean Kasten, being challenged by former state representative Jeannie Ives. Can you tell us anything about how things are shaping up there?
Sean Kasten knocked out a six-term GOP representative in 2018. He's now facing Jeannie Ives, who I believe is a former state rep, and she also ran for governor against Governor Bruce Rauner. And that's been a pretty tight and heated race, I would say. Pat Brady, the former Republican Party chairman, I believe, of the state, endorsed Sean Kasten. And Kasten has made a big deal of going after Ives for, you know, supporting Donald Trump or giving him an A grade, you know, on his first term in office. Ives, you know, has similarly gone after Kasten for, again, being quote unquote further to the left than maybe the district wants or needs or what constituents are maybe wanting right now or needing. And so I think really that rhetoric is. I'm not sure exactly how the district, whether or not they're buying into that, whether or not they believe in that or going for Kasten or Ives, but I think that that's definitely been a big point of this race.
Yeah, as they say, there's only one poll that matters, and that's the actual election itself.
Yeah.
I wonder, do we know anything? I mentioned at the top of the show that the early turnout numbers are pretty remarkable. 62% of the number of ballots that were cast in the last presidential election have already been cast here. That's 3.5 million ballots already cast. A lot more mail-in ballots that still have not been returned. Do we have a sense of how early turnout numbers are, potentially affecting any of these races?
I would assume, or rather just from the bit of information, the conversations I've had, this turnout is widespread. It's statewide in terms of more people are coming out either through mail or early voting to make their voices heard, to cast their ballots. In these particular races, I'm not too sure yet exactly how this will affect these races or if it'll affect it at all, but I would assume that these are also seeing a bump in early voting numbers.
Okay. Yeah. Listeners, I want to remind you, our phone lines are open. The number is 800-222-9455. We've got to take a break in a couple of minutes, but maybe we can get a call in quickly on line four. Craig in Frankfort, Illinois, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in. What's your question?
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me on. My question was about kind of undecided. You know, I'm a middle-aged guy, so I remember when it was always, you know, 40% Republican, 40% Democrat, and everybody fights over the last 20. Now, it doesn't seem like that's the case anymore. Do politicians at the more localized level, do they still look at undecideds really as the key, or is it more just driving their own kind of true believers into the polls?
Yeah, good question, Craig. I don't know who might want to take that. Ryan, I wonder, do you have a perspective? Do you hear candidates trying to appeal to the undecided voter, or is that sort of a mythical creature in 2020?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of that in the 13th congressional district here. You can see that in some of the policy positions of the Democrat, Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan. She, for example, supports the public option for kind of reforming healthcare versus Medicare for all. So she's a little bit more to the center there than some on the far left in the Democratic Party. Likewise, she does not support the Green New Deal, which is another sort of cause of the further left wing of the Democratic Party. So, I believe she genuinely believes those things, but it's also where she needs to be if she's going to win in a district that voted for Trump not too long ago.
Okay, let's take a quick break. The phone lines are still open, listeners. If you want to join our conversation, the number is 800-222-9455. The number again, 800-222-9455. We're talking sort of a final look at some congressional races around Illinois heading into the election, which is tomorrow. As we said, 3.5 million of you have already voted out there. We want to hear from you. If you have, what are you seeing at the polling places? The number again, 800-222-9455. We're going to continue this conversation after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just tuning in, we're having our Monday Reporters Roundtable about some of the competitive House races and other races around the state. Our phone lines are open at 800-222-9455. Our guests are Rachel Hinton of the Chicago Sun-Times, Ryan Denham of WGLT, and Tim Shelley of WCBU in Peoria. If you have any questions for our guests, you can join the conversation by giving us a call. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. Rachel, I wanted to ask you, what you might be seeing in the U.S. Senate campaign. We haven't talked about it much. I guess it's not, it's not one of those that's looked at as being particularly competitive. Incumbent Senator Dick Durbin facing a challenge from former Lake County Sheriff Mark Curran. I noticed on your Twitter that you were covering a President Trump rally. Former Governor Rod Blagojevich had some choice words. Maybe we can't repeat those on a public radio program, but take it where you will, Rachel.
Senator Dick Durbin, longtime state senator, faces Mark Curran, I believe a former Lake County sheriff, as well as independent Lily Wilson, who has run for Senate before, I believe, as well as mayor recently. Besides the Trump rally, former Governor Blagojevich's statements at the Trump rally, Curran stumped for himself yesterday, saying, he's the only one to really help constituents in this district or in the state, rather, to make sure that constituents, the state, the residents are getting what they need. Durbin, as well as others, have kind of painted Curran as kind of Trump-like or a Trump clone in some ways. My colleague at the Sun-Times, Mitch Armantrout, did an overview of the race recently. And it seems like everybody in the race is trying to paint themselves as the only truly independent person in the race, which, I mean, that's not uncommon, in these times. But it seems like everyone is attacking Dick Durbin right now for his years in the seat. I think he's been there over 20 years. And so, now they're trying to, it seems, push for a new direction or a new vision for the seat, and they want a new voice in there. And the two independents, Willie Wilson and Republican Mark Curran, believe that they're the best choice.
Yeah. Although it seems like there have been a number of Republicans over the years who have tried to defeat Dick Durbin, and he seems to have some of the most comfortable margins of any statewide Democrat. So we'll see what the voters decide tomorrow, I guess. Rachel, I also wanted to ask you about Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox. This is another closely watched race. She was one of these early wave of sort of reform-minded prosecutors who came in as the criminal justice reform movement has gained steam in America. They were elected, a lot of them 4 years ago, African-American women in many cases around the country. And she is facing a pretty tough challenge this year, right?
Yes, it's pretty close, or it feels pretty close. She's currently facing Republican Pat O'Brien, who's a former Cook County Circuit Court judge, a longtime Democrat in that position. But he's running now as a Republican to give him the best chance to oust Fox. In every conversation, every editorial board meeting, he's painted her as inept, as creating or enforcing policies that have only led to more crime and more fear. She has painted him as Cook County's closest version to Trump, saying that his rhetoric on law and order and name calling is no different really than Trump, and it would only set the county back. She points to her criminal justice reforms as undoing wrongful convictions and trying to create equality or parity here for you know, Black and brown people, for people who regularly or more often come in contact with the criminal justice system. And she says that, you know, Pat O'Brien isn't the best thing for the county, isn't the best thing for the justice system. Also in the race is Libertarian candidate Brian Dennehy, a much more lower profile candidate. Doesn't really seem to be as into the yelling or the back and forth that typically goes on, especially this late in the race. But he, you know, was campaigning on not wanting to see people in cages. I don't believe Dennehy has a huge chance in this race, given that the name recognition is kind of low for him, or pretty low. But I think it'll be interesting to see how this one turns out, especially if, you know, Fox's recent decisions or moves or actions are anything to go by. So
yeah, and she is, of course, getting a lot of attention on the whole Jussie Smollett incident with the actor who, you know, claimed that he was the victim of a racist attack, and then how her office handled the aftermath of that has been the focus of a lot of attention, right?
Yes, yeah. And yeah. I mean, that happened in 2019. Obviously, a special prosecutor was appointed to the case and more charges were filed. So the Jussie Smollett case has really followed her throughout this whole campaign season. And it's been a thing that even her Democratic primary opponents, you know, attacked her on or ridiculed her for. And it's been a thing that Pat O'Brien has also criticized her for as well. It didn't really work for those Democratic opponents, you know, back in March. So it'll be interesting to see if it has any effect this time around. But it's definitely a thing that I think is still on a lot of people's minds, you know, as they think about voting in this race.
Yeah, yeah. Tim Shelley, I want to ask you, you're based in Peoria. What are your election night plans? I think listeners might just be curious to know, you know, usually reporters are dispatched out to various candidates, you know, victory parties. I'm not seeing a lot of candidates planning to have victory parties. Do you know what you're going to be doing on election night yet?
Yeah, so for the most part, you're correct. Most of the traditional election night parties are either Zoom or they are, you know, canceled entirely this year. So there's a lot of adaptation happening there. I know we are getting in contact with a couple candidates via phone. They have no formal events whatsoever. So, you know, COVID definitely is changing the way traditional election night, as you may know them, works.
And Ryan, same question to you. Do you say same thing in your region in Bloomington Normal there? Anybody braving, I guess that's not the right way to say it, anyone sort of taking on the risk of having a big election night gathering in that
Yes,
area?
Is anybody reckless enough to have a crowd of 500 crowded into a ballroom? No, not in our neck of the woods. It's going to be mainly virtual. For us media types, it is a bummer, obviously. Election nights in newsrooms are always a good time. Pizza, snacks, staying up late, but it is not to be this time around.
Yes, I can still remember the traditional cookies that the Metro editor's wife would bake for the State Journal Register and bring those in every election night was something very, very, very anticipated and sought after. Rachel, I guess same question to you to bring our conversation to a close. Do you know where you're going to be, what you're going to be looking at on election night? What are you watching out for?
I'll be at home. I'll be at the sometimes Ravenswood Bureau, I guess. I will be following the state's attorney's race. Really, really looking forward to seeing how that turns out, especially at home. This has been an interesting period of time, trying to remain productive and focused. But yeah, that's where I'll be. I think the state's attorney will have a small gathering at, I believe, the Kinsey Hotel downtown. Might be wrong about that, but She's doing, like, I think no more than 10 or 15 people, most of them press, like a little press conference thing. I think I might order some Lou Malnati's because that's what we do on election night. Try to still make it fun. I'll probably still stay up late too. I don't expect it to be an early night.
Yeah, I was trying to convince my own family to have pizza, which is usually Friday night in our household, to be pizza Tuesday. Because, yes, pizza and election night do go together like hand in glove. All right, we're going to leave this conversation there. I want to thank Rachel Hinton, chief political reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times. Ryan Denham is the content director at Public Radio and 21st member stations, WGLT and WCBU in Bloomington and Peoria. And Tim Shelley, who's the news director at WCBU Peoria Public Radio. Ryan, Rachel, and Tim, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your reporting with us.
Thanks, Brent.
Thank you.